Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Welcome back. Taxation is theft, and I have with me today Vicky Rose, who is running for Mississippi District 37, the Mississippi House. Welcome. How's it going?
It's going great. I apologize for my attire. It's not very professional looking, but I've been out knocking on doors today.
Awesome. And I'm going to be putting my sunglasses on and off all day because the sun is in a funny spot. Funny weather, but, how's it going? You're a libertarian running for office. What kind of insanity is that?
Yeah, imagine that, right? Especially in a red state, MAGA country.
Right.
Why would I do that? Well, it's who I am. I did my time in the Republican Party to a certain degree, working on the Ron Paul campaigns, which brought me in. I was pretty much been independent-minded for most of my political life, I guess if you call that, from about 18 years on. But the Libertarian Party just, you know, when the Republican Party told my husband, when he was the chair of the GOP for our local affiliate, we were supporting Ron Paul very vocally in 2012, and the state party came down and my husband said, you must endorse Mitt Romney and no one else. And we hadn't even had the primaries yet. And excuse me, this is my vote. My voice, and I'm going to use my voice for, you know, who I will endorse. And so the next day he tendered his resignation. And actually, I'm at a friend's pool house right now, and it's that friend who kind of had been coaxing us into the Libertarian Party over a couple of years. And so here we are. So we've been involved with the Libertarian Party ever since.
Wow, that's crazy. And that's, I mean, I was kind of just starting to, I guess, get into politics at that point. I was kind of following Ron Paul in 2012, and I remember like seeing what was going on at these conventions and how they were really trying to screw him out of that nomination. And that's really interesting just to hear from that perspective, because like we have, you know, it's always like we hear all these things. It's always kind of rumors. We don't have any hard proof that the Republican Party is rigged from the inside. But then you hear, you know, you get a phone call like that, that's telling you, no, you have to endorse this candidate. And then it's like, ah, okay, there's my proof right there.
Right. And it was, and again, the primary hadn't even happened in Mississippi yet. So there was no official on paper candidate for the Republican Party in Mississippi yet. This is who you have to, you know, who you have to promote.
Right. And that's, I mean, it's kind of funny you say that, because I remember, like, what I do remember about the Ron Paul conventions was that they would have the answer. There was one where they had, like, someone had a video where the answer was on the teleprompter before the yays or nays came in. And they were like, I don't know, someone had a video of that. And it's kind of the exact same thing. It's like they know the answer before the votes are taken, because they don't care about the votes.
And I remember that.
Yeah. And it's like, we're looking at the Democrats right now, and they were, I'm sure, going through the same thing. I don't know who they have picked. I want to say it's Joe Biden, 'cause he's like, you know, the party insider. But he's been screwing up a lot lately, so I don't know how long that's going to last.
It'll be really interesting to see what happens over the next few months. A lot can happen even in 1, 2, or 3 weeks. And, you know, I'm hitting, what, just under 20 minutes, so 20 days. Yesterday's 21 days. So just under 3 weeks in my campaign. And, you know, anything could happen in the 11th hour.
Right. So let's talk about your campaign. You are out knocking on doors all day today, which a lot of candidates do that. Mostly it's libertarian candidates that do that. I don't think that the two big parties ever waste their time with that. I've certainly never seen one. But what's that like? How many doors do you have to knock on? How many people are in your district, and what kind of reactions are you getting from people?
Those are some really, really good questions. But first, before I answer them, I just want to say that in the area that I live in, we have had a number of people knocking our doors, both on the Republican and Democrat side, in previous races. This year, in my own community, though, no one has knocked my door for the other races that are going on. So in Mississippi, we have the all the statewide races occurring, and then we have our state House, state Senate races on top of that, and then county elections are occurring also, and then a couple of school board positions. And we have 122 representatives in the state of Mississippi. Our state constitution says we can have no more than that, so we're right at the max. Right. And my district is, you know, meet gerrymander. You know, Mr. Gerrymander is this wonderful man who prevents people from getting on the ballot and discourages people, I should say, more or less, from running for office. And Mr. Gerrymander, he just kind of needs to be buried. And that's one of my objectives in running for Mississippi State House of Representatives is to help make this process more fair so more people can be on the ballot in 4 years for these races. Because in 2021, we get to redistrict after the census is performed next year. So how is door knocking going? It's going really well. I have about 8,000 households in my district. There's roughly 23 to 24,000 individuals per district for the 2010 census and in Mississippi. And let's see here, what was the other data point I was going to give you? I have about 17,000 registered voters in my district. So if you were to go along with the recommendations for some of the expert groups that help you with, you know, figuring out your magic number for how many doors to knock, I haven't honestly really been able to figure that out because of how the maps were changed in 2011 and 15. So I have knocked just about 1,000 doors by myself so far. And I really resisted in the beginning, even though my campaign started in March, I really resisted really putting myself out there until after the runoff elections that were at the end of August, because people were, even during the primaries and then the runoff primary, sending me messages saying, where's your name on the ballot? I want to vote for you and I can't find you. And even though I told people I'm not going to be in the primary, there is no primary for libertarians in Mississippi. So I didn't push that real hard because I knew that voters can be silly and then not show up in the general when it counts. So that's when I really started getting out. And now I have about 4 or 5 people who've showed up and they have said, I'm ready to knock doors for you. So this week we're starting to roll out more people. My response is amazing at the doors. I've got about a 63% yes rate. So when I knock on doors, one of my strategies is asking them, can I count on you for your vote? And I'm logging that in eCanvasser app. And I have around an average of 63% of people who are saying, yes, I'm fed up. I'm ready for change. Because my opponent has been in there since 1999, 20 years. And he has not had an opponent for 12 years. And I am his first and only opponent in the last 12 years, and people are really, really excited.
Awesome. So, I mean, is this guy, I know a lot of places I've lived, nobody even knows who their representative is. Is this guy pretty well known?
In a portion of the district, he is. So again, the map is very gerrymandered, and the heaviest portion of this district is in a community called New Hope Community, and there's and that's in Lowndes County. So Lowndes County has about 11,000 of these 17,000 registered voters in my district, and so there's about 4,000 to 5,000 people that will show up to the polls in that area, in the New Hope Community area, from that area. I might have that wrong. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. But Yes, within New Hope community, which is where his stronghold is, he's very well known. That's where he lives. That's where his children have gone to school. He has classmates, and then he has siblings who went to school with others. So he's pretty, you know, well entrenched. He was also a school board member in that in the Columbus School District, also for a length of time. So people know who he is. But then there are them that he's a representative. He's been in there for 20 years. I get the, ooh, yeah, we need something, somebody different response.
Right. So now, is this guy, is he Democrat or Republican?
He is a Republican. Yes.
And it's a Republican district. So that kind of makes sense why I guess the Democrats wouldn't even try. And actually, I do remember this because you sent me, I heard him on some radio thing, and he's talking about how far right he is, and it's funny because even like the extreme right will say like, oh, I'm not that far right, like I'm right, but I'm not like, you know, extreme right. And this guy referred to himself as, I'm so right, there's nobody to the right of me, which I thought was just like, as like, I'm sure that's not what he was trying to say. Like, he's not like alt-right or, you know, an extremist or anything, but that was kind of funny how it came out. But so what's kind of his deal? He sounds like, you know, he's got like the country accent, you know, he's been around there for a while. I guess not the country accent, the Mississippi accent. And, I don't know what can you tell me about this guy?
I don't know him personally, you know, on a one-on-one level, but yes, he is born here in Mississippi. He's from, like I said, the New Hope community, so he's going to have that strong Southern drawl. Myself, I've been in Mississippi for 10 years. I spent almost the first 10 years of my life in Tennessee. So at one point, I did have a very strong Southern accent, but it kind of went away when my family moved to Minnesota because it's where my daddy was from. And I can turn it on if I need to, but I'm just going to be real to me.
Nice.
But Mr. Chisholm, he's a really nice man. He's one of these gentlemen who has, I think he's got integrity. He knows what he believes, and he's going to stand firm in his beliefs, and he's not going to move. You know, he's not going to budge. There's no way to do it. But, you know, you mentioned the radio interview on Super Talk, and I really had a good chuckle out of that. Because what you failed to mention is that he says, yes, I'm running against a libertarian, and libertarians tend to be, well, almost no government. So she might be more far to the right than I am, but that would be really hard for somebody to even go further right than me. And that conversation came up today when I was knocking on a door. A gentleman had told me that he knew Mr. Chisholm and he was probably going to vote for him. And I said, you know, that's great. You have to do what you need to do because this is your vote and it's important to you. But I would like to know if you have any questions for me in case I do win this race, because you know, you need to know who's going to be representing you. And he really enjoyed that question. And so we started a conversation. And he said that, you know, Gary's pretty far right. He never has voted for a tax increase. Whenever an opportunity comes up for a tax increase, he just, I will not. And I said, you know, I was thinking about that when he said that. And I was saying he was probably thinking about not voting for, you know, raising taxes. But I can give you one example that I know of off the top of my head where he has. And that was in 2016. The state of Mississippi decided that they were going to, whatever lobbyist firm was, you know, working on, group was working on this, to establish a board that would require auctioneers to become licensed. So they have to jump through hoops. They have to pay an exorbitant amount of money, go through classes. This field that has been around for hundreds of years, all of a sudden, you need to get permission from the state to do it. And he voted for it. And I said to the gentleman, that raised our taxes, or you can consider that a raise in taxes, a raise in fees, because now we have to fund this board that oversees the auctioneers. And so he's, you're right. You know, so nice. the Republicans will say, you know, I'm staunch, I'm firm, I'm pretty conservative, I don't, you know, raise any money. But when you really look at their record, you really have to hold their feet to the fire and say, yes, but what about this time?
Right. Well, here's what's interesting that I've seen about Democrats and Republicans. Like, they have this kind of dynamic where I always say they're kind of working together, even if they don't know it. And that's like, you have, so Trump lowered taxes a little bit for some people, but he didn't lower spending. And what you see, like you always see, like you hear about the Democrat, Bill Clinton, who after his presidency, we were running a surplus. He did such a good job. We were running a surplus. We were actually driving the debt down. But it's like, if you look at it, the spending always increases. He didn't cut any spending. He just increased taxes. And when you look at the Republicans, they don't cut any spending. They just decrease taxes. And so when the Republicans are in, yeah, you have lower taxes, but they make it so that when the Democrats come in, they have, oh, there's more debt. We're going to have to raise the taxes even more. So it's, you know, even when the Republicans take control and lower the taxes, it really doesn't matter if they're not cutting the spending, because it's just money that's right. borrowed that's going to be collected by a Democrat later on. That's pretty crazy. So, and you know what you were saying, I was trying to remember that, because he said that in such a weird way. He said, just like how you said it, he said, there couldn't be anyone further right than me. Well, except for maybe this person, but she's crazy to think you can be further right than me. Like, it's like he was almost insulting being far right by saying it's a crazy idea. Like, I'm hanging off the cliff, but she's going over the cliff. Like, that's kind of what he's saying. It's like, I don't think that's the right analogy, but...
I really wanted to just interject in there and just go back in time and say, hey, Representative Chisholm, have you had a chance to look at any of my policy ideas? You're claiming that I'm just saying, like, almost absolutely no government, but you haven't even looked at any of my policy positions. So... I think you might need to go back to the drawing board, but I understand too that it's his job as a candidate to make the other one look bad.
Right. So now, something else that I heard on that show is it sounded like he had—I want to say a heart attack, but I'm thinking Bernie Sanders. He had a stroke or something recently, didn't he?
Not quite too recently. It was last April of 2018. It was at the end of session. And to my understanding, he had a very difficult time with it. And he actually had the one stroke, and then he got into the hospital and he had a second stroke. And he has gone into detail on it. He was interviewed by the Clarion Ledger out of Jackson, Mississippi last early summer, I believe it was. And he's had a very long recovery process, and it was, for me personally, when I heard that he was running again, I was very surprised because of that. I experienced in my own family my grandfather having a stroke that left him with some significant memory loss. He also experienced I think some paralyzation on one side of his body. And I can remember as a young girl, my dad crying. I just saw him break down in tears because my grandpa was a carpenter. And we got to their house, and the screen door, the flashing had fallen off a little bit on it. And my grandpa had taken about 20 screws to screw it in. And they were going, you know, up and down. And had my grandpa been, you know, a full capacity of mind, it would have been maybe three or four screws, you know, across the bottom to hold the flashing in. And it just, it stuck with me forever, that, you know, that reaction, my father, and, you know, watching my grandmother have to care for my my grandfather. And so when I heard about his experience and the severity of it, and granted, I know he's been very blessed to be able to have the recovery that he's been able to be able to do there. I really hope and pray that he's not putting himself in, you know, further harm's way, that he's been able to learn some skills, some coping skills to keep his stress level down, because I know that working in Jackson can be stressful, and he does tend to have an intense personality, and that's okay. That's him. And that's what he's known for. But I really hope and pray that, you know, should he win again, that he's able to continue on and keep his stress levels lowered for himself and his family.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah, you're kind of reminding me of my grandfather. He didn't have a stroke, but he started getting dementia, and he was a carpenter also. Yeah, it's really hard to see that kind of stuff. Is it just the two of you? Is there a Democrat in this race?
It's just the two of us. Like we mentioned, the gerrymandering, the Democrats have not run anyone in this district because they've known that no one can really beat him. We have the minority versus white population is also kind of skewed compared to the rest of the region. It's not fair, in my opinion. It's not fair. Right. Every district map that is drawn should be drawn in a way that anyone from any thought pattern, mindset, policy, belief, whatever you want, you know, however you want to label that, should feel like they have a chance. Right. And that their voice might be able to have a chance in Jackson. And we shouldn't be pushing people out. We shouldn't be giving people the chance to have an opportunity to choose in the general election.
I mean, they should be, you know, roughly circles or squares. They shouldn't be like these weird, like, I've seen some where it's like just this long strip that's like 1,000 miles long. Like, I think in Texas we have a couple like that. And it's like, what are you doing here? Like, you should be able to like get across your district in a half an hour at most. And it's like, some of these things are, you know, just so long. And it's not like they're sparsely populated. It's like some of them, there's one in San Antonio. I think it's the west side of San Antonio, which is pretty dense, and it's like a big circle. And then it turns out into this little tiny string that goes all the way out to El Paso. It's insane. It's insane.
Wow.
That's like 800 miles. It's, you know, they do this in, I was just thinking when you were talking about this earlier, like, is it possible? Because when you redistrict, right, somebody's in one district and then all of a sudden they're in a different district. Is it possible, or has this happened? I'm sure it's happened, for somebody, like, let's say your opponent who's been in office for 20 years, for him to get redistricted out of his own district?
Yes.
And you know, what happens? I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess the weird, I was thinking that the interesting thing about that would be that he's no longer in touch with any of his constituents and he has to start from scratch. But I guess if they're redistricting in the first place, then that happens anyway, even if he stays in the same district, just because his district now...
I would think that the map would, the district, they would try to keep him in it, but draw it in a certain, you know, a certain way. Cause they try to do it with the minority population, the white black ratio in mind to some degree. And I believe that the general consensus is to try to keep the black white ratio in comparison to the statewide ratio. And it's not accurate. I have a 60% white, 40% black ratio in my district. And the Kabir Kareem's, which is just Columbus, I know that his was imbalanced also. It's just north of me. It just borders a portion of my district. And then another district that borders mine, that would be Carl Gibbs' district. His district has like a 70 or 80% black population. And it's just, it's very interesting how they choose to draw those maps.
Right.
So I know that I'm up for a challenge, you know, going in there, and I'll be learning a lot. And I have a really amazing opportunity to win this race and be the first Libertarian to go to Jackson, Mississippi. The people on the ground are so excited. I'm having blowback, you know, within this last month here. And it's been, I've just been laughing at it. It's just kind of funny. Well, you know that, you know, you're a threat when people start doing and saying things.
Right. So I want to get into some policy with you in a minute. But first I want to ask, and especially since you mentioned blowback, what kind of blowback are we talking about? And what kind of what kind of response are you getting from the press? Are they being friendly with you, or are they trying to remain silent and not mention that you're running? What's going on there?
They haven't been harsh with me, and they haven't really talked a whole lot about this race, because the big focus is the gubernatorial race. That's where all the division is occurring. It would do them well to focus on this race. It would probably sell some newspapers because of Gary Chisholm's popularity or lack thereof in the recent years. But the kind of press I'm getting last week, my husband had a judgment against him that we didn't know about. It wasn't even on his credit report. And a newspaper journalist called me out of the blue on Tuesday. How are you going to respond to the voters about the fact that your husband has a judgment against him on his record, and it's public record? What? Excuse me? What are you talking about?
Right.
So it was a smear attempt, and this apparently happened on May 15th. And the gentleman who I believe leaked it to the to the press, he was in the newspaper saying, if Vicky cannot pay her bills, she shouldn't be holding any position in the state of Mississippi. My name wasn't on the judgment. My name wasn't on the bill. It was a disputed invoice between him and my husband. And I had told my husband, you take care of it. I'm running for office. I don't want anything to do with it. This is, you hired him to do a job. He did a bad job. Just deal with it. I trust you, you know? And so of course they're trying to pin it on me. So I wrote a letter as a letter to the editor, and I got some really, really good response. A lot of people, yeah, I could see through that. And then, we haven't had any public forums. I've been begging people, can we get a public forum between Gary and I? I know that I would do amazing in front of a lot of people in a public forum capacity with him, but he's kind of silent, and we're not hearing anything. I don't see the press as being hostile toward me, but my signs are being stolen. And when we find out who's doing that, I will press charges. I know it's part of routine for campaigning. You expect it to happen, but I'm a libertarian, and I tell people, you know, the libertarian philosophy is, don't steal my stuff. Let me live my life. As long as I'm not hurting anyone, leave me alone. And that's how I'm going to govern. Well, someone's stealing my stuff, I'm going to hold people to that, right? This is my property, my campaign purchased this. You're stealing my signs. Yes, they're $2 or $3 a piece, but it's a principle of the matter. I don't care if this is just, you know, campaign tactics and people don't want people to know that I'm out there. I get it. It's campaigning, but you don't steal my
signs. Right. Yeah, it's I went through that on one of my campaigns too. It's and you know, we saw a ton of that with the Trump and the Hillary and mm-hmm. everybody else too. So it's interesting, but yeah, set some cameras up and get some faces and post
them online. I'm not exposing the strategies we've been using, but see, it's not just a bunch of kids that are doing it to be silly. This is people where my signs have been in there longer than my opponent's, and then all of a sudden my opponent's signs go up same day mine are gone.
Right.
You know, this is a tactic by either the GOP or some of my opponent's supporters that are doing this.
This is interesting too, because I've talked to people who, and I mean, you know this because you've worked in the GOP. Like those big parties, whenever somebody announces they're going to run, they have resources. The party's like, oh yeah, we'll get you a campaign manager, we'll get you a fundraiser, we'll get you like everybody, right? We'll get you volunteers, we'll get your website, like they can do everything for them in the snap of a mm-hmm. finger. And like, when you consider that, like, you know, there are people out there who don't even care who the candidate is. They're just putting up signs and taking down opponent signs. They know nothing about them sometimes. And it's really kind of a shame, but this is how those big parties operate. They just have, you know, people who are their street team, who's just willing to do whatever it takes because they're just, you know, they're just following orders.
Well, the GOP really hasn't been out a whole lot doing it, really anything for my opponent, to be honest with you. I think this is just a couple of people who are close to him, maybe even family members who just, you know, supporting him. I have not seen the Republican Party out doing anything on his behalf.
So let's talk about some policies. What's going on in Mississippi, and what do you plan to do about it?
The hot topics in Mississippi are the Medicaid expansion. That's been really, really big because Mississippi denied the expansion that had been offered to all of the states. So that has been something that's come up a lot. And in one of the forums, the question was asked, to all the legislative candidates, will you do Medicaid expansion? And they were all Democrats in the room. And of course, all of them stood up and said, yes, we need to do it. And they gave their reasons why and what they planned to do. And they didn't really offer really any solutions other than yes. And I took the microphone and I said, well, I hear everyone saying that they're going to expand Medicaid, but it's really good. It's a great plan when you think about how you want to help people, but you're hurting people more than you're helping them. 50% of doctors are not taking on new Medicaid patients, and you're going to give people false hope that, oh my goodness, now you're on the Medicaid rolls and you can go call your doctor, you can get preventative medicine, but they're not going to get it. And they're still going to end up in the emergency room, and the hospitals are still going to be hurting for their money because people are still not receiving preventative medicine. So we need to be bold, and we need to come up with a different idea, something that's not happening. Mississippi is last in almost every category. Well, let's be first place and doing something new and fresh. The first thing we need to do is we need to establish a committee. I'm sorry, I couldn't find the word. A committee that would investigate the harms that accepting Medicaid does to our citizens and to our doctors, and how much money we would actually save if we weren't following the guidelines of the AMA, if we weren't following everything that the federal government tells us to do in order to accept the federal dollars with all the strings attached. How much money are we saving? And then how much more will people actually be able to afford healthcare in Mississippi? Come back with that study, and then let's decide, well, maybe we should actually be doing it. And then while we're doing that, let's start. Are you familiar with the tax scholarship credit program for, like, say, like New Hampshire and some of the other states where they offer people can pay into a scholarship fund as a tax credit? And then the students can, instead of a school voucher, so it doesn't come out of the school system, their school budget, it's a tax credit. So I would like to do the same type of thing in Mississippi, but we're going to incentivize doctors to volunteer at least 4 hours of their time per week in helping people with their medical needs, no questions asked. And in return, they can apply for some money out of these funds that would cover their medical malpractice insurance. I've spoken with doctors throughout the state, and they've said, some doctors have said, now, I wouldn't have the time to do it, but if I did, I would definitely do that. Or yes, I would do that in a heartbeat. These are therapists. These are doctors who would work, in a family therapy type situation, mental health doctors, physical doctors. These are pulmonologists, other doctors who want to help people, dentists who want to help people. And the advantage is they don't have to do the coding. They don't have to get on the phone with Medicaid and get permission to do something while the patient sits there with a mouthful of gauze. And then some unelected bureaucrat on the other end of the phone is saying, no, they don't need that root canal. Nope, we're not going to cover it. Click. We're hurting people by continuing in the system. We need to offer something new. Do you have any questions about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So are you saying that basically they would, for a certain number of hours, somebody would come in, they would basically give them a free procedure, and let's say that procedure costs $1,000. Instead of charging the patient $1,000, they would get a $1,000 tax credit on...
Oh, no. So it would be individuals and corporations could contribute to a fund. Mm-hmm. And the individuals and corporations who contribute to this fund. So let's let Whole Foods put their money where their mouth is, okay. Right? They want universal healthcare. They want everybody to be taken care of. These corporations who are trying to force universal healthcare on people, we're giving an opportunity for people to receive healthcare for free, okay? So if I wanted to, say, put $100,000 of my own personal income in there, I would get a tax credit. And this fund is managed by an organization that the state says, yes, you know, we give you the stamp of approval to manage this fund. And then the fund disperses, you know, the money for a doctor's medical malpractice insurance to be covered in exchange for their faithfulness to help the community.
Okay, so the person, so there is an actual transaction of money, and the person, the company or person putting the money in, would be receiving a tax credit for donating, and that money would go towards paying a doctor
their medical malpractice insurance.
I see.
So they get their medical malpractice insurance covered in exchange for them offering services for free to the public. I see.
Okay. So there's two types of exchanges. There's the one, the person donating to the fund and receiving a tax credit, and then the other one is the doctor who's giving away a few hours of free free treatments or procedures, and he's receiving free malpractice insurance.
Yes. So like one couple in New Jersey, she and her husband, they both contribute 6 hours per week. And I had found, she actually had talked about this idea for the state of New Jersey and wasn't ever able to really see where it went. But she had put it out there, said, this is an amazing idea. We need to do something similar to this in Mississippi. But she wanted the state to cover the medical malpractice insurance. Like, no. No, the state shouldn't be covering any of this. This should be completely voluntary. And so I came up with a tax credit, you know, solution as the option there. But between she and her husband, they're each doing 6 hours a week in the basement of their church, and they're seeing 300 people a month, no questions asked. Did your house just get foreclosed on? That's not going to show up on your bank statements. You're going to possibly need some medical help. We don't know what your situation is. I really do not believe that people will abuse the system that, you know, don't need, oh, hey, I can get free healthcare, I can just go in there. Most people are going to go to their doctor that they already trust and they have a relationship with, if they can afford it and they have insurance. But who are we to judge, right? So they're seeing 300 patients a month. And then through that process, they're being able to identify people who might need some clothing. So they were able to start a clothing closet to give people clothing, people who need food. So there's people that are getting other types of help and assistance and are able to go back to work because their preventative care is being taken care of. Their diabetes isn't out of control, or whatever is going on with them that prevented them from going to work. They're becoming a contributing member of society again.
Interesting. So I'm trying to see if I have any issue with this, because of course I hate taxes. It is certainly interesting, because let's say, you know, hypothetically, if somebody were putting this money into, let's say it's not a government agency, let's just say it's a trust run by some public nonprofit. And then that public nonprofit is the one who pays for the insurance for the doctors. No government involved. They do whatever they do to check up on the doctors. The government doesn't subsidize this program with any tax money. Then that would be totally acceptable. And with a receipt, just like with a receipt when you donate to Salvation Army or Goodwill or anything, you have a receipt and that's tax deductible. You take that to your taxes and you get a deduction on it. That would be basically what you're doing with this. So you're taking a donation that you did for the good of society without government, and you're taking it to the government and saying, hey, give me back some of my damn tax money. Is that
basically okay? And that's what happens with the same program for schools. You know, I'm not pro school voucher, because it's a Pandora's box. You don't know when someone is going to say, and we're starting to see it happen in Mississippi, actually, hey, this is state money. You're giving them vouchers. We have to control what's being taught in a private capacity with state dollars. There are some instances where the Supreme Courts have ruled, you know, in various, you know, instances that, hey, this is okay to do this, but people will continue to try. And I cannot support school vouchers for that reason. That's why I support the tax credit system, tax credit voucher system, over and above that. the end, ultimately, this Constitution, the state of Mississippi Constitution, says that we must have public education. And ultimately, we're looking at it phasing itself out over time. But this is the system that we have to work with. And we have to continue to offer it because our Constitution says that. Let's make it work without taking more dollars from the taxpayers. Let's find out ways that we can take less dollars from the taxpayers to continue the system that we have. More people are starting to homeschool. More people are starting to do things online, right? So we're not using that system as much anymore. We're phasing it out over time just because of where humanity is going. But for now, we have to make it work.
I'm seeing, I don't know if you've been following the story with a kid in Florida who's volunteering for my campaign and passing out some stuff and got in trouble.
Yes, I saw that.
It's insane. I've hated public schools for a long time, but they're literally telling him that what's in the state law does not matter, that they make their own rules. Once he got suspended for wearing a hat outside, I did some legal research. I found state law that says schools can make their own dress codes or whatever. They can even enforce a uniform, but they cannot tell kids that they cannot wear hats outside.
Specifically. Wow.
Because I guess it's like a medical thing, like they could have heat exhaustion or something, cover their eyes, whatever. It's in there. It's the law. And so I give that to his parents when they go in for the meeting before they go back to school. They show this printed law from the state website that's got all the laws. It says 2019 on it. And they say, yeah, but that's state law, and we have our own policies here at the school and in the district. And I'm just like, how do you? But this is the thing. Like, I've tried this at the DMV. When I first started getting into we're gonna go off on a little tangent here, but when I first started getting into how much of this government crap is really necessary. I found a federal law that says no state can deny a privilege to any person for refusing to give their social security number.
Yes.
And I took that to the DMV and I said, give me a driver's license. And they said, here's the form. And I gave it back with the social security number empty. And the woman at the counter was very nice. And I said, yeah, I'm not going to give my social security number because I have here. And I pulled out the paper, federal law that says I don't have to. And she's, oh, wow, this is really interesting. She was, she was being nice and friendly and interested that I found this. She went back to tell her manager, and her manager came out, and she was irate that I would even propose this. And I'm like, well, it's federal law. It says so right there. It doesn't matter. If you have a social security number, you have to put it there. And it's like, what's my recourse, right? I can either drive around without a license and get harassed by the police, or I can file a federal lawsuit against them, which, most people, and even me back then, did not have the knowledge or capacity to know how to do that. And it's like, what are you going to do? You're screwed. Like, even though the law is on your side, you're screwed. And
they could have just entered 00000, in there in place of it, but they don't know that. The computer would take it.
Yeah, and they don't want to do that. It's because they want to be able to track us and all this other garbage. So it's really interesting. And it's, especially with schools, I was just thinking the other day, I see all these countries where people are revolting against their governments. And a lot of them are actually pretty young. Like you see people who are, from the late teens to the early 20s. And I'm thinking is that what killed America's revolutionary spirit? Because we're all still in school until we're 24.
That's an interesting question.
Cause it's I can't miss school for this. I'm going to get bad grades. I'm going to ruin my entire future. If I get out and protest. So I don't know. I was just thinking about, Americans still get out and protest every once in a while, but it's usually over something kind of,
It's frustrating because we see these things that so recently in our local area, there's been a group that has been going across Northeast Mississippi to ban kratom. Mm-hmm. And they first started out in part of my district that I'm, striving to represent, not in my county. And they succeeded in two of the localities and then the entire county. And then they brought it to my backyard. And I said, nuh-uh, not in my watch. I stood up in front of a board of supervisors for my county. I stood up in front of my city council. And I explained to them how people are being helped by this. And people, no one else would come out who uses it. Yeah. I don't even use it. The only thing I wanted to do was hold my elected officials' feet to the flames and say, you will honor your oath to the state constitution of Mississippi, Article 3, Section 32, and the Ninth Amendment of the United States Constitution. You swore to uphold those and you're going to do it. And they did. Well, I can tell you this, the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics doesn't like me very much now.
Yeah.
That was fun. We're still fighting.
And I still don't even understand what kratom is. I know it's a plant extract. I know it helps with, I guess some people say it's kind of like coffee. It'll give you a little energy. Some people say it helps with pain relief and arthritis and some other stuff.
There's a number of different things people might use it for. Our soldiers use it that have PTSD, and so they can't use marijuana, but kratom's not illegal, so they're getting relief from kratom. It's very hard to overdose on it. I don't think anybody can really overdose on it. You get major stomach upset if you take too much of it. Anybody has the ability to be addicted to a substance. Seven people out of 100 are going to have an issue. Okay, so you're going to punish 93 people for the seven? Hello. Right. But it's okay. Anxiety, PTSD, pain. It is not an opioid. What it does is it acts in the brain as the same opioid receptors, and it mimics that. So people who are on prescription opioids and have addiction problems have been able to get off of it, and their body doesn't have the pains. And some of them, not all, because sometimes opioids do work better for some people. And who are we to say? I'm against the restrictions that people are putting on that too. And I think that's how you first messaged me, was one of the graphics I put up. I'm already against the next restriction. I'm already against the next ban. I mean, they're trying to do the vaping bans, the vape oil bans. Right. We're going to be out 13,000 jobs in the state of Mississippi, $43 million in sales in the state of Mississippi with vape oil alone last year. And you want to cut it because of the master settlement agreement from big tobacco? Oh my goodness, they're losing money. Oh my goodness, the state is losing money from tobacco tax sales. But people are getting healthy from it, and a couple of people are making bad choices. And so let's punish everybody.
Yeah, that's one thing that, man, everyone thinks the government's there to help us, but it's when you see stuff like this, it's like, no, they don't. It's the bottom line. It's the money. It's their friends who are making money. The big tobacco companies. It's insane. And yeah, that happens all the time. So I'm glad to see you're fighting that. So what else? I mean, how far are you willing to go? You said there's a, which department did you say is mad at you over because they wanted to?
Kratom?
Yeah.
Well, there's a little local group called the Lowndes County. It's like a community activist group, and they have three initiatives, and one of them is, with regards to drugs. And the gentleman who's running for sheriff, who got the Republican nomination for sheriff in my district, is heading it up. And he actually works for the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics. And after the city of West Point voted to not ban it, a gentleman pops up out of nowhere, never seen this man before in my life, approaches me as I'm talking to some business owners who sell it, and we're celebrating, our win here. And Vicky, I've been following you, and you're doing so wonderful and so great. I love what you're doing. And he just really wanted to dig. And I was just like, this is really interesting. And I've had other experiences like that right after the insurance lobby found out, because my opponent is the chair of the House Insurance Committee and he's an insurance salesman. Right after the insurance lobby found out about me, it was about a week or so later, a gentleman pops up out of nowhere. I had sponsored an event through my campaign for the homeless coalition. And he pops up out of nowhere. And my friend who was hosting it said, I've never seen this guy before. Don't know who he is. Just where did he come from? And he's a Chinese sympathizer. And he's trying to, lure me in. I'm just, this is pretty interesting. Where did this come from?
Yeah, it's weird. And I've heard some similar stories like that where, people get the feeling that they're being set up or someone's trying to dig for some information they're going to trick you into selling them some weed or something so that they can just bust you and take you out of the race. That's always really interesting. But I'm just thinking so you mentioned the Bureau of Narcotics. Would you attempt to dismantle that bureau?
I was just speaking to a woman today and she was telling me her story about her son who has a felony now because his wife had lupus and he started taking some of her prescription pain meds and then he ended up doing something wrong in that regard. She didn't tell me the story. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is he was doing something that didn't hurt anybody else in the state, slaps your hand and you shouldn't be doing that. So now you're a felon. You can't get a job the rest of your life. So now he's a 40-some-year-old man living with his 60, 70-year-old mother. She's not the only one in our state that's suffering that way. And it's not just with prescription opioids. It's 30 grams of marijuana in your pocket. It's methamphetamines. It's, might be, you don't hear about it, but it might be mushrooms. Whatever it is that these people who work for the Bureau of Narcotics think that, you're a bad person. Because the law says you're a bad person. Because the state statutes say you're a criminal, that means you're a bad person. So here's how far I would like to go. I would like to introduce some legislation to repeal anything that's on the Controlled Substances Act. Because our families are hurting. When a man, a father or a mother is taken out of their home and put in incarcerated, not only do they run the risk of themselves being beat up and then having to be extorted for money and finances from the violent criminals who are in jail and then their family suffering financially because of that. These are some stories that people who used to investigate the Department of Corrections have told me about. Not only is that happening, but these children don't have two parents in the home anymore. We know that when children have two parents in their home, they succeed in school. They're more confident, they're happier, they thrive. They thrive in their community. These kids are sometimes being taken out of their homes and put into foster care. 80% of children put in foster care end up in the prison system themselves. We are spending over $40,000 a year per inmate for nonviolent crimes. That's over $4.25 million Mississippi is paying annually. That's just in incarceration fees. That doesn't include the amount of money that our state is paying for these people when they can't get a job. And our state is having to give them food stamps and other assistance because they can't get a job because the state called them a criminal. These people are not receiving help because they're stigmatized. They won't go to their churches because they're a sinner. They won't tell somebody, I need help. I have an addiction problem and I don't like it and I don't want it because they're afraid they're going to go to jail or their church family is going to, say, hey, you're bad. And they, right. Or the family members are going to be chastised. How could you let that happen under your roof? And this woman here that I spoke to, and I said those very things, she says, that has happened to me. So a repeal this. So that's going to get rid of the Bureau of Narcotics. But not only that, I told her, I want to make reparations for all individuals who are currently alive. We need to allow their records to be wiped clean if they have no violent crimes on their records. Just because they were ingesting something into their body for whatever reason, no judgment, they didn't hurt anybody else or had something on their person, they should not carry that burden with them for 75 years and not be able to thrive and survive.
Right. And I'm looking up to see, how many people this affects. There's So I'm trying to get some stats here, and Georgia's the worst.
Mississippi, we have 4,000 nonviolent offenders in prison right now.
Well, so the total number of felons is about 10% of the population, a little bit less than that. Looks like 8 or 9%. And that's and that's kind of normal. I mean, Georgia's the highest one at 15%, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, those are all around 10%. And Mississippi's a little bit below that. So yeah, that's insane. I mean, that literally means you go to Walmart and you look around and one in every 10 people is likely a felon. And most of those people are good people. Like, most of these people are, you know, they are bullshit charges. They're nonviolent offenses, their possession of drugs. And what people don't realize too, you know, I've been trying to bring this out to a lot of people, is the stigma of felons is that, you know, they were doing something wrong. But there's so many people that, like, you can be driving a friend, you can be an Uber driver, and somebody can drop drugs in your car, and then you're driving without a passenger in your car, and you get pulled over, and now they find the drugs that your passenger dropped, and all of a sudden you're a felon. It's insane. And I know personally, like, stories of people that this has happened to. Parents lend their car to their kids, go out driving, they have a friend, their friend drops some drugs in the car, the kid doesn't want to rat out their friend, the parents do, and like, eventually the dad ends up almost going to jail because none of the kids want to confess to whose it was. It's insane. The same thing with prescription medications. Someone legally has prescription medications in your car, and then they forget them there. You're screwed. You can be totally screwed. It's just insane. And this is, like, you know, like you said, this is hurting people's jobs. You gave the example of somebody who's living with their mother now, and now they have to take care of them. And it's like, they're expected to now, you know, make enough money to pay for themselves and their parents. And they just, where are they supposed to get this money from if they can't get a job? Because you're a felon.
Plus, his wife has lupus. I mean, that's a hardship in and of itself.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, you're preventing people from getting access to medicine, which means you're making people more sick, which means you're making more people require somebody else's help. And at the same time, you're taking away everybody else's ability to take care of themselves and to work and earn money to do that. It's insane.
Yeah. And in the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics, okay, yes, yeah, you're probably not going to like me hearing me say that right now. But those are jobs. Those are real jobs that people have. Right. That's going to save the state money. We have more people employed to some degree with government in the state of Mississippi than, you know, really any other industry. It's the largest employer in the state. And it's probably true, probably for most states, actually.
Yeah,
but
there's
we start cutting out some of these departments that are hurting people with, you know, the original objectives. We're gonna save money. We're gonna be able to put the money into, hey, do our schools not have enough? And the schools is another issue. You know, I got a survey from the Friends of Mississippi School of Math and Science. It's an amazing school. It's like number, I think, 6 in the country as far as high schools go. But one of the questions asked was, you know, do you support, you know, more money going into the schools, you know, K-12 programs, and one of the other, I don't remember what else it said, but I said, well, after we've gone to the drawing table and we've worked the Shad White, our awesome, amazing state auditor, and found all the places where the state is spending money that we shouldn't be spending money, and we can redirect those funds and not take more money from the taxpayers if we really need it, that would be my last resort, though. My first resort is standing up to the federal government saying, we're not going to follow your regulations. We're not going to do Common Core in this state any longer. We're getting rid of the testing requirements because it's hurting the students. It's hurting the teachers. The teachers can't teach. They can't do what they thought that they loved to do. And they can't help people thrive and become the best possible versions of themselves, which is what they wanted to do. And they can't do what they wanted to be able to do to help society, because our government puts restrictions on them and the red tape and all the hoops that they have to jump through. And when Mississippi can get rid of all that red tape and can allow the local governments to decide their curriculum and the teachers to teach how they know they can teach best, we just might not need more dollars. Because the real problem is too much regulation.
Right. And you started that out with an interesting point that it's going to cost jobs. It's going to cost state jobs. And I know a lot of people are worried about that because they're like, well, oh, I work for the government. It's actually, I was giving out, my propaganda at an event one day. And the one person who really seemed to stand up and be pissed off about me saying taxation is theft was, outed herself as somebody who worked for the state tax collector. And so, of course, not only is she mad because she knows her paycheck comes from taxes. And I've had conversations with the TSA and most of them hate taxes. Even though that's where their paycheck comes from, not really, because it comes from the ticket, but, it's not, people are like, government employees are worried about when you talk about cutting agencies because they think, oh my mm-hmm. God, that's my job. And what makes it worse is the government usually pays sometimes as much as two or three times what a private sector is going to be doing. So let's use the TSA as an example. They're probably getting paid two or three times as much as what they used to, as what airport security used to get paid when they were doing, when they were just doing regular airport security. When you talk about police versus private security, you talk about, anybody, the IRS agents versus a private CPA, the IRS agents get paid, two to three times more. And so when you consider this, it's like, I don't want to quit working for the government. Like if you're working for the government, I don't want to I could go work for a regular firm, but I'm going to take a huge pay cut. Then I'm going to pay taxes on top of that. That's not very attractive to people. But that is something that we do have to take into consideration that, you're going to have to do it because the money you're earning is stolen. So,
well, in Mississippi, we don't necessarily have that problem that you were talking about with the government jobs earning more. It's probably the opposite. And they're in it for the benefits package. They're in it for the retirement, for the PERS. PERS is not, we cannot fund it. Well, over the next 70 years, and we're upside down. But the I believe that we need to open up the option for like a 401k option or whatnot for employees to put into that. But when we start cutting these unnecessary jobs, so something I am hearing from state employees as they knock on doors is we haven't had a raise in 20 years. Okay. Well, if we start cutting unnecessary jobs, we can maybe divert some of those funds so some of that can work out instead of raising the burden on the taxpayers for those necessary state jobs to function in the necessary role of, government. But we, in reality, our teachers are the lowest paid in the country. Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. And that teacher pay has been the hot ticket item in the gubernatorial debates. And it's the question for all candidates for a state Senate and state House. Do you support a teacher pay raise? Do you? Well, yes, they do deserve more money for all of the work that they're doing, but I am not going to raise taxes to do it.
How much are they making?
Oh, my goodness. Let me ask the gentleman here, Nathan, do you remember the base pay for teachers in Mississippi? But like the assistant teacher's base pay for the assistant teachers, I think is like $12,000 a year. Oh, wow. Or maybe it's 24. 12 sounds low. It's really low.
That's pretty low. Although I would be, my position on taxes is it's, like I said earlier, it's the spending that's the tax, because ultimately if you increase the spending, you're going to, mm-hmm. So I don't really like the idea of cutting one place to raise in another place, because then you're not really cutting. But what's interesting is if you look at, and I'm curious to see how this would work, is if there are restrictions, and I've seen this, in different places whether it's in healthcare or in education, where people working for the government make less, but then people who are able to create their free market alternatives, so somebody creates a private school, for example, they pay the teachers better, they provide better education, mm-hmm. and if people are able to switch and maybe save on their taxes, the money that they're spending on taxes, they get to spend on the school instead. Now they're going to school where they're getting a better education for their kids, and the teachers are getting paid more. Then what happens is the state employees, the state teachers, eventually would say, well, I'm going to get paid more. I'm going to go work for the private schools. And then you'll see more people going to the private schools. And basically everybody just abandons the old system and moves into the new system, which just works mm-hmm. so much better for everybody, for the employees,
right.
for the students, for the parents, for the taxpayers and everything.
Right.
So I think that if you're going to tinker around with that system, I would say that might be the first thing to look at, is what's preventing new schools from forming private schools.
And we don't have our I was actually just looking at this with a friend last couple of days, because they had been talking about wanting to start a private or public school. But our state law is actually quite wonderful. You don't have to be accredited with the state. If you want to start a private or for-profit school, nonprofit, you can start a for-profit school in the state of Mississippi. You don't have to be accredited. If you're accredited, then you have to have your teachers that are licensed. But if you're not accredited, teachers don't have to have licenses. You don't have to follow under the strict guidelines for testing or subject matter.
What is that going to... So let's say I'm a parent and I'm deciding whether I want to send my kids to this school or this school. What's like, you know, oh, unlicensed schools versus a free licensed school versus something I have to pay for and it's not accredited.
Are you familiar with like the Waldorf schools?
No.
Okay, so there are a number of schools that historically have been for-profit schools that do have, you know, some unaccredited teachers within them. And the benefit to that is they're like a free agent. You can trust them to be able to really listen in and tune into your child and their needs without all of the. So let's take a salesman, for example. My husband's business, he prefers to hire somebody who's never actually been in sales before, because they don't have to unlearn everything that they were learned and taught and how to do it. And he can just put them in there and train him the way that they need to go. Mm-hmm. The same with somebody who has a passion for a particular subject and they have a good grasp on the subject matter, and to be able to allow a student and take a child under their wings and be able to help the child flourish, help the child learn and grow in that subject matter. Teaching degrees are a good thing to have. I'm not saying that you shouldn't, you know, if somebody is inclined to go to school and get that teaching degree and learn more to enhance what they can help with others, that's great. But not everybody has to do that. And if in the end, it's all about personal choice. If a parent feels that it is better for their child to go to this school for whatever reason, and they're going to look at the whole package of it. They're going to look at the results, the proven, you know, results over time. And they're going to look, you know, probably have tours of this is a public school that they're going to be paying for. Do I really want to send my child there? This is their choice in the end. And that's what we need to get back in America, is right. to personal choice.
Yeah, I mean,
for our individual lives.
It sounds great that's available, and I'm wondering why isn't that, like, you know, the big thing there? Why isn't everybody doing that? I'm wondering, you know, what maybe you have an answer.
Oh, okay. So why in Mississippi? Why isn't it being done here?
I mean, like, so it sounds like you have the environment where anybody can kind of create their own schools and do whatever they want and not have to worry about state enforced schools and everything else. Mm-hmm. Why isn't everybody just switching over to that? Is it just expensive?
Well, we don't have the schools, for one thing, mm-hmm. and people have to be willing to change their mind to do something a different way. Now, remember, we're in the Deep South, mm-hmm. where doing what your mama and your daddy and your grandma and your grandpa told you to do is how you do it. You vote Republican because you were told to vote Republican all your life. You vote Democrat because that's what grandma, grandpa, and mom and daddy did, right?
Right.
So it's entrenched. So it's a matter of changing your mind. And this race, me winning as a libertarian, is going to be a catalyst to give people permission to do something different than they've always done. Hey, a libertarian won. A libertarian went to Jackson, Mississippi in a heavy red state, in a red district. We don't have to do everything the way we've always done it. We can actually question everything.
Right. Yeah, that's really, and I hate the word permission because I like to say free men don't ask for permission, but you're right. That is like, I mean, I went through that too. Like, you know, there's a point where mentally it's like you can't do things because you believe it's not, like, you're not supposed to, or you can't, or you don't have permission, or you're looking for somebody to give you permission to do it. And a lot of times when you do that, a lot of people will tell you, like, oh, no, that's crazy. That's crazy. Like, man, when you ask someone if you should start a business or, you know, something like that, a lot of people, no, just go get a job. I've been through that myself. But it's really interesting that you say that because yeah, it's sometimes you do need a sometimes the permission is somebody telling you you don't need permission. And that's that permission that you need. So that's really mm-hmm. awesome. So, all right, we're getting to the end of the show. I want to give you an opportunity, to give any plugs, anything. Do you need anything for your campaign? Are you looking for volunteers, donors? We've got your website on the screen here if you want to say it so everyone can hear it.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity. Establishment politicians are failing Mississippi families, just like they're failing families all across the country. And it's time to send a new voice to Jackson, Mississippi, who's going to be the voice of the people, not corporatism, not for corporate America, but for the people that I'm meeting every day as I'm out knocking on the doors. But I do need help. You're right. Thank you for asking. First, you can go to my website, voteforvicky.com. And it's F-O-R, voteforvicky.com. And it's great because I can use that in future races too. So you can contribute to my campaign. Right now I have a goal within the next 2 days actually for $800 towards radio ads. I've got 3 radio stations that I'm trying to get on. It's $10 per ad for me to do that. And I'm going to be reaching various demographics with that. I do have another radio station who just contacted me earlier today who was talking about doing something completely and totally different. So that's amazing, reaching the Democrat demographic with that. So I'm excited to move forward with that. Volunteers, if you are in the southeastern region, we've got some place for you to stay. I've got 20 days, well, as of this, pretty much 19 days left in my election. And yes, I do need door knockers. If you're available to come out and hit some doors, if you enjoy doing that, we're about 20 minutes from, no, I'm sorry. My district actually borders Alabama. There are times where I'm driving my district, I'm like, over the state line. Whoops. Okay. Let's turn back around. So if you are on the western side of Alabama, I'd love to have you, or anywhere in Alabama. I'm about 2 hours from Tennessee. And so we're northeast Mississippi, about 2.5 hours from Memphis. So give or take there. So contributions would be great right now. Like I said, $10 a radio ad. I have got enough literature to knock about 4,000 doors yet.
That sounds great. So, and your website is voteforvicky.com. And, yes. That sounds awesome. So I hope you can meet that goal. That sounds pretty reasonable. And radio ads are always really awesome. They help everybody. If you're a libertarian and you want to help the libertarian movement and you're not even in Mississippi, go ahead and make a donation and spread the word. Maybe I should ask first, can you take out-of-state donations?
Yes. Okay. So there is no cap on a personal donation coming into my campaign from anyone that is a U.S. citizen. No cap. So if you're ready to write me a $50,000 check, I'll take it. Okay.
Awesome.
It's Friends of Vicky Rose, P.O. Box 864, West Point, Mississippi 39773. You can send the check tonight. The corporate limit is $1,000, and I'm not really trying to take any PAC money. Oh, sorry. Awesome. Lost you there for a second.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. It's really great to talk to you about all this. I hope your campaign goes well. It sounds like you've got a really awesome chance. You've got a really solid platform and strategy. And I hope you can meet that goal and get those radio ads. I'm sure you will. And awesome. So thanks again for coming on, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to your viewers. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And taxation.
Good luck
is
in your
theft.
Campaign. That's right. That's right. Bye.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Roads.
You boys like Mexi?